This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for March 23, 2017. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. On Monday, the Maine Legislature's Joint Committee on Environment and Natural Resources held a public hearing on 7 different bills pertaining to metallic mining in Maine. The issue came front and center in 2012 when the J.D. Irving Company sought to change Maine rules to allow for metallic mining at Bald Mountain in Aroostook County. Despite 2 legislatures voting down rule changes on the basis of environmental and cleanup concerns, the State Department of Environmental Protection continues to push similar rule changes in this session. The public hearing began at 9 in the morning and lasted into the night, with almost total testimony voicing concern for the environmental impacts of metallic mining in Maine. This included Chief Brenda Commander of the Holton Band of the Maliseets and Chief Charlie Peter Paul of the Aroostook Band of Mi'kmaqs, who both said the tribes have not been consulted. We hope to bring you more from these testimonies on air and online from the extensive public testimonies. Today we bring you the testimony of Representative Ralph Chapman of Brooksville, the co-sponsor of 3 of the 7 mining bills, and Department of Environmental Protection Deputy Commissioner Melanie Loizen.
Then we'll move on to 253. Ralph, do you want to do both of your bills at the same time?
I'd actually like to do all 3.
Okay.
If I could at the same time.
So we're going to do, so everybody that's listening, he's going to do 253, 254, and 685.
That's correct.
All right. And you have the time you need, Ralph, to do what you want to do.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Senator Saviello, Representative Tucker, and members of the Joint Standing Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. My name is Ralph Chapman. I represent House District 133 in Hancock County. And for the new members on the committee, welcome to the perennial discussions of the mining issue. Of the 151 districts in the state, mine is the only district that has had any metal mining in the last century. There are 2 mines in my district. One, the Callahan Mine in my hometown of Brooksville, is an open pit mine. It was mined in the late 60s, early 70s. And the other mine in the largest town in my district of Blue Hill was last known as the Kerr American Mine. It was an underground mine. Both mines have failed. Both mines have irreparably contaminated the groundwater of the state. Both mines are continuously, meaning today and every day, contaminating the surface waters of the state. One of them, the Callahan Mine in Brooksville, is an EPA Superfund site, and the last estimate from the EPA was a $45 million price tag for partial remediation of the mining site, 10% of which comes from the Maine state taxpayers. So we are paying at the rate of about $750,000 per year, and that we can expect to do that at least for the next dozen years. Clearly, we do not want to repeat this problem. So I am bringing before you 3 separate bills, as mentioned, LD 253, 254, and 685. And one might wonder why they're not combined to be one comprehensive solution to the various problems that we face. And I would be perfectly happy if they were all combined. 2 years ago, I did bring what I thought was a comprehensive solution, and I'm a little afraid that because of an objectionable part of that comprehensive solution may have dissuaded full attention being given to its other parts, which is why I've parsed this comprehensive solution into the 3 pieces. In order to understand these proposed solutions, we need to understand the problems, and to understand the problems, I need to give you a little context about mining and the regulatory history of mining in Maine, and I apologize for taking the time away from all the good folks who have traveled here to provide their testimony to you. I will let you know that I've curtailed my remarks by several hours.
Thank you.
Metal mining involves removal of metal-bearing ore consisting of metal sulfides from its location embedded in non-metal bearing rock, where it has resided for hundreds of millions of years, and without contact to water or the air. And this is an important part of sulfide mining. In the mining industry, the sulfide mining is considered the highest liability mining on account of this basic chemical problem, which is that when you expose the sulfide minerals to air and water, they oxidize, forming a sulfuric acid, which can then dissolve the metals and create what's called an acid mine drainage or acid reactive drainage. This is an acidic, highly toxic aqueous solution that flows downhill wherever the rivers go, and that's the primary. That's one of the primary environmental hazards of sulfide mining. It's the control of that problem that represents a great deal of the concerns for how to regulate the industry. The unused particulate slurry formed by crushing the sulfide minerals into dust and wet chemically separating the more concentrated metal portion is the mine tailings, which is often placed in a large lined artificial pond called a tailings storage facility. Sometimes they're actually placed in real ponds and so forth, but obviously that ruins the pond. So an artificial pond is preferable, but tailings storage facility failures are sometimes very spectacular. And in fact, I encourage you, if you have not seen a video of the Mount Polley disaster 2.5 years ago, look that one up on YouTube in order to get a sense of what a major tailings storage facility disaster looks like. And that's the tailings are toxic because they have heavy metals in them. They're also toxic because they have the leftover chemicals that were used in the flotation device system or whatever the system was for separating the more metallic content from the less metallic content. A difficulty with this slurry is that the mechanical properties of the slurry are not well controlled or not well known. It's held in place by some kind of dam structure, and that dam structure, if it starts to fail, the slurry kind of makes for a slippery additional lubricant to cause it to really fail, and as I say, it's spectacular and catastrophic. There is a third major problem with respect to mining that I want to bring up, and that is the public cost for dealing with the aftermath of mining. I mentioned that the public, including the main taxpayers, are paying for some remediation work in my hometown of Brooksville. And the mine site in Blue Hill was not listed on the priorities list or the Superfund list because there were several mining companies that were alleged to have responsibility for that. And through a federal district court ordered consent decree, those three mining companies were absolved of all future liability by putting up $12 million to paid to a liability holding company, which installed a geosynthetic cover over the waste rock and tailings at that mine site in order to reduce the concentration of heavy metals in the Carlton Stream by 97%. The Department of Environmental Protection, which this committee oversees, was responsible for monitoring the effectiveness of that geosynthetic cover for 5 years after its placement about 8 years ago. They have not analyzed their data, and they have not issued a report. Since you are the committee of oversight for it, you might ask the department, especially if they come before you today, what the status is of their monitoring and why they have not analyzed their data or issued a report. I can give you a clue by letting you know that the concentration of heavy metals in the Carlton Stream, which were in the range of 5 tons of zinc per year dissolved into the Carlton Stream, has not been reduced by 97%. So the intended object of that geosynthetic cover was not fully realized, and the measure to which it was not realized or what costs will be incurred, again, the only people to pay for it now are the public, is not yet determined. So quickly in summary then, we have the acid mine drainage problem, we have the tailing storage facility problem, and we have the public expense problem. Those are the three major concerns. There are other concerns as well, but I'm concentrating on those. Now, historically, from World War I to the late 1960s, a period of 50 years, there were no commercial metal mines in Maine and there were no regulations. Upon seeing the open pit mine in Brooksville, Maine's legislature passed a law in 1969 to require mining companies to work toward reclamation of mining sites by planting trees. One of my wife's brothers was hired to plant trees at the Callahan Mine. That's, of course, tree planting does nothing for removal of or prevention of the leaching of the toxic heavy metals into the estuary or Goose Pond, which is in the intertidal zone. In 1991, a set of rules were created to regulate mining, which, along with their corresponding statutory environmental restrictions, formed the basis of Maine's mining regulatory structure. In 2012, a new statute enacted by the 125th legislature became law, which removed all of the statutory restrictions and directed the Department of Environmental Protection to write a new set of rules to become effective upon acceptance by the legislature. The 126th legislature did not accept the newly written rules. The 127th legislature, in consideration of the same set of rules that were resubmitted, chose to extensively rewrite the rules that were also rejected by the legislature. And as you'll hear, that was by more than 3-to-1 margins in both chambers. Now, another set of rules has been written for our consideration, and that's one of the bills before you today. And at the same time, the Board of Environmental Protection has advised this committee by a letter dated in early January, I believe it was, that the enabling statute passed in 2012 has major deficiencies. On page 2 of 3 of my testimony, you'll see very briefly the history from 1918 to 2017. At this time, as Representative Duchesne clearly stated, we have a legal structure, a mess, I think he called it, consisting of a 2012 statute which says the 1991 rules still apply, even though the 1991 rules make reference to statutory environmental restrictions that were removed by the 2012 law. I agree with the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Protection, who told me that if a mining permit application were received by the department, regardless of the action or inaction taken by the department, a lawsuit would ensue. Even so, I cannot see how the judicial branch could discern our legislative intent.
And you are listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. Today we are listening to some of the testimony from Monday's Maine Legislature's Joint Committee on Environmental and Natural Resources, a public hearing held on 7 different bills pertaining to metallic mining in Maine. Representative Ralph Chapman of Brooksville is the sponsor of 3 of those 7 bills.
So let me make it very clear. The legislature has clearly made a mistake in the 2012 statute. And it's our job to fix that mistake, and that mistake is that we have a disjuncture between rules and statute. For this reason, I offer LD 254, which is an emergency bill, meaning that it's expedited and could go into effect very quickly, to place a moratorium on acceptance of mining permit applications. Whenever the legislature, in its wisdom, has fixed the underlying cause of today's incompatible law, the moratorium can be removed. Whether that fix is instituted in a few months or a few years, the moratorium protects the state from litigation expense. And as an emergency measure, it could go into effect within a week or two. And I strongly encourage the committee at its first work session to take up this moratorium, pass it unanimously, get it on the consent calendar up on the floor, and at least put this in place as a means for mitigating liability, legal liability costs associated with a potential lawsuit. It does no harm to have the moratorium. The moratorium can be removed by any other action that the legislature takes. And in order to solve the underlying problem, the legislature has to take an action. Whatever that action is can include the removal of this moratorium. So the moratorium solves the immediate legal problem with the disjoint statutes and rules. It maintains stability during the fix of the underlying problems, regardless of the form of solution. And any legislation that implements a fix can include a one-sentence repeal of the moratorium, and it prevents costly and ineffective judicial branch involvement. Now, the 2012 mining statute has serious problems, well beyond simple fixes. I'm not going to detail those for you at this moment. I'm happy to provide that for you at the work sessions, and I'm sure you'll hear about many of those problems from others that testify today. For this reason, I offer LD 253 to repeal the 2012 statute, thereby returning us to the statutory framework that existed between 1991 and 2012. This is an interim solution, superior to attempting to fix the 2012 statute and providing stability while pursuing a long-term solution. This repeal bill has some advantages. It has some disadvantages. I think it's easier to correct the disadvantages than as I say, going a different route. It puts the statutes and rules in synchronization with each other, and that's a good thing. It reduces or eliminates the risk of a NAFTA-related lawsuit, which would be a good thing. It reinstates the relationship of site development rules, et cetera, to mining. You may not know, at least, and many of us in the legislature did not know in 2012, that the 2012 statute removed the application of site mining, site development law from mine, removed mining from that site development law. And what that means is that today it's more difficult to permit a large office building than it is to permit a mine, and that doesn't seem proper. So one of the advantages of the repeal is that to reinstate that part of the law. Now, some of the difficulties with the repeal concept is that it retains the 30-year-old non-understanding of mining risk management. We've learned a tremendous amount in the last 5 years, let alone the last 30 years. And so those rules are outdated. They don't make reference properly to some of the concerns that we know of today as being major concerns. It does not improve the system of regulation. It does not provide updating of best knowledge and practices. We can know that a set of regulations is not adequate when it doesn't use phrases like best science and best practices, because that is, of course, what we would like to use. And it also, if we repeal to the 1991 rules, we are perpetuating the myth of the efficacy of permitting by punishing failure. And I'm going to describe that in a little more detail in a moment. All of the regulatory systems so far employed are based on a permitting system that punishes failure. And what that means is that you're given a permit to do some things, and if you violate that permit, then you're forced to take some other action or pay some fines or whatever. In other words, everything is fine until something is not fine, and then the permitting process is providing a motivation by the developer trying to avoid the punishment. That provides an incentive to the developer. Now, in mining, it's a little difficult. There are two difficulties. One is mining itself, which is the extraction of the metallic mineral from the ground. The cash stream for the mining company comes when they sell the metal at the other end of the process. So any expense that they have to undertake other than removal of the material from the ground and getting it to the smelter, any other expense associated with protecting the quality of the water, et cetera, is an added expense for which no further revenues are generated. That means it comes directly out of their profits. That's a very strong economic motivation to be as least environmentally protective as possible. That's the reason why the industry needs to be regulated in the first place. But if the regulation then provides is a mechanism that simply punishes the failure, it doesn't prevent the failure. What's needed is a structure that prevents the failure rather than punishes it. Let me illustrate that by one other means, which is to say that a catastrophic failure of a mine will cost more than the company can afford to pay. And so it steers us right into the direction of having the public pick up the tab for the failure. We would rather that the company do what is needed to prevent the failure, and to do that requires a different form of regulation. I make a comparison between the mining industry and the nuclear power industry, and although there are some significant differences as well, they both share the characteristic that they are both capable of doing more damage than the company can afford to pay for. In the case of the nuclear power industry, it's more than the industry can pay for. In 1947, it will be worth your while to understand some features of the Price-Anderson Act, which was the mechanism Congress used to fund the liability for nuclear power accidents. And I'll discuss that with you in more detail during the work session. To effectively build a regulatory structure that is protective of the environment, expertise in mining is needed to advise the legislature. For this reason, I offer LD 685 that establishes an expert panel to act in an advisory role to the formation of a new statute to regulate metallic mining in Maine. The advantages of going that route is that it brings, for the first time, mining expertise to bear on the formation of a regulatory structure. It provides the ability to develop a regulatory structure that does not depend upon permitting by punishing failure. It provides an ability to develop a regulatory structure that uses expert third-party continuous oversight, which is the mechanism used in the nuclear power industry, and it's my proposal that that be the general form of mechanism used for the mining industry. And it also provides the ability to develop a regulatory structure that can adapt to evolving best science and best practice. Now, I draw your attention to a list of provisions in LD 685. It's on page 2 and 3 of the bill under number 8D, 1 through 9. Number 8, powers and duties, and then D, shall design a statutory and regulatory framework for metallic mineral mining in the state that contains all standards necessary to protect the public health and safety and the environment, including but not limited to standards regulating effects on groundwater quality, control of noise, preservation of historic sites, preservation of unusual natural areas, effects on scenic character, and protection of wildlife and fisheries. A statutory and regulatory framework for metallic mineral mining designed by the panel must, at a minimum, and then there are 9 listed features. The question that I want you to keep in mind relative to these 9 features is, for what reason would any of these provisions be unreasonable? That is to say, I think it will be worthwhile during the work session to go over each one of these to see whether it really makes sense, or if it doesn't, what the reason is that it doesn't make sense. I won't take the time now to go over them all, but I'd be happy to answer questions about it either when I finish today or during the work session. Finally, in the interest of time, I will bring to the work session material I have not mentioned here, which I think is pertinent to the issue, but I don't want to take more time today, including a critique of the expected economic harm and net jobs loss that would result from poorly regulated mining in Maine, and a description of the social and psychological characteristics that I've observed in my district from the mining activity that has taken place there. And with that, I'll close and take any questions that you have for me at the present time.
Now, I believe what we'll do is we'll hear from the department on the rules, LD 395.
Good morning, Senator Saviello, Representative Tucker, members of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. My name is Melanie Loisem. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Protection, speaking in opposition to LDs 160, 253, 254, 580, 685, and 820, and in support of LD 395, approving the Board of Environmental Protection's Chapter 200 rule for exploration, advanced exploration, and metallic mineral mining. The proposed rule, Chapter 200, that is before you in LD 395, is the result of more than 3 years of rule development work by the Department, the Board of Environmental Protection, this committee, and many interested parties. When the Department requested in August 2016 that the Board of Environmental Protection once again consider changes to their rule for metallic mineral exploration, advanced exploration, and mining, the Department proposed to work forward from the last version of the rule. That version was analyzed at length by this committee in 2015, and through the vehicle of LD 750, this committee provided the Department with a long, specific list of changes. Rather than throwing the baby out with the bathwater, the Department incorporated those changes, then reviewed previous criticisms of the rule, and made more changes to address those. Then, through the Board's hearing and deliberative process, more requirements were added, including the requirement for an independent on-site inspector. We believe that the rule submitted to you for consideration now is comprehensive and very protective of public health and the environment. I know it is a beast to read through, but if you take the time to do so, you will see layer upon layer of requirements that must be satisfied simply to obtain a permit to mine, and then all the additional layers of requirements for ongoing operations, closure, and post-closure. If an applicant for a permit cannot satisfy those requirements, they will not get a permit. If they do not comply with their permit, they can lose it, and they must pay whatever it costs to return their site to its original condition. As part of the major substantive rulemaking submission, the Board of Environmental Protection provided a summary of commenters' remaining concerns that the Board could not resolve without conflicting with the Mining Act. These included mining in floodplains and flood hazard areas, mining on public lands, and exemptions from groundwater standards in mining areas. Senator Saviello's bill, LD 580, would provide you with a vehicle to address those concerns, although his concept draft goes beyond those matters and would effectively prohibit mining altogether if you do not approve our proposed rule this session. While we debate what should be allowed or required in law and rule, we have some pieces of the old rule still in effect, while other parts were nullified by the 2012 Mining Act. Legislation that would perpetuate that situation leaves us with inadequate environmental protections. Legislation banning mining altogether will create uncertainty for other resource extraction industries in the state. If you take gravel from an area with a massive sulfide deposit, how long before that's banned too? I would assert that the best course forward is to help us all finish making Chapter 200 a strong tool for ensuring that only responsible, compliant metallic mining operations may be permitted where they will not adversely impact Maine's important natural resources and citizens. Thank you for the opportunity to provide you with our comments, and I'm happy to answer your questions.
And you have been listening to some of the testimony from the public hearings on mining bills on Monday. Work sessions on all seven of the mining bills will be held in Augusta on Monday, March 27th. You have been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio.